You're listening to The Parting Shot with H. Alan Scott.
There are actors, and then there's Annette Bening. I mean, even when I talk to other actors, they're like, yeah, nobody compares to Annette Bening. I was just chatting with Regina King, humble brag, and even she said her and her friends regularly talk about that one scene in American Beauty. You know the one.
Shut up! Stop it, you weed, you baby! Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
And there are so many moments like this over the course of her career. From American Beauty to The Kids Are All Right to her most recent film, Naiad, where she played the real Diana Naiad, who famously swam from Cuba to Florida at the age of 64. Well, now she's adding another performance to that amazing list in Peacock's new limited series, Apples Never Fall, premiering on March 14th. Bening plays Joy Delaney, the matriarch of a seemingly perfect family who suddenly disappears. Spoiler alert. This family is not perfect. Something is wrong in this family. The series is based on Leanne Moriarty's book of the same name. Now, you're familiar with her work because of, you know, she wrote the book that's based on HBO limited series Big Little Lies with Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon. You know it. You love it. And in fact, Big Little Lies was a big factor in Bening agreeing to do this Peacock series. More on that when we have our chat in a little bit. Now, Bening is one of Hollywood's most lauded actors. Her peers are obsessed with her, as am I. But for some reason, the Academy Award has eluded her over her career. I'm furious about this, but don't worry. I had to tell her how angry I am that she doesn't have an Academy Award. And her response, it's in my brain and it will never leave. And it's with me for the rest of my life. And it will be with you for the rest of your life after you listen to this episode. It is so, so good. But before we get to it, I want to give you some homework. After you watch Apples Never Fall on Peacock, I'm going to need you to go back and hopefully rewatch some of her past films. Start with Bugsy. It was, you know, incredible. You could also watch The American President, American Pie, Being Julia, The Kids Are All Right, 20th Century Women, and then Naiad. I mean, there are so many options. It's a long list. I know it's a long list, but it will make for a great weekend of entertainment. Okay, let's get to it. Go on and grab a snack because I will be right back with Annette Bening.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is such an honor to chat with you. I have to say, I've been a big fan of yours for a very long time, and when this all came together, I was just thrilled. Oh, hello. Hello. Yeah.
Hi.
It's just such a, like, literally since when I was a kid, literally on vacation and we saw The Great Outdoors and I was like, who is this who is this woman and why am I obsessed with her? And then I just been obsessed with you ever since.
Oh, that's really sweet. You know, it's funny, that movie was such a kick, you know, and I had never done one before. So for me, it was just, I remember so many things about it. One of them being that we had to get up insanely early, which you always have to do for movies, but this was particularly early because we had to drive around a lake to get there. So I remember having to be picked up at like 4:45 and thinking, this is so cool. I don't think that anymore. Now I think, why the fuck do we get up so damn early? This is insane.
Well, it's,
this is insane.
It's so funny because, like, I talked about this with another friend recently about how, as like, as a queer person, we as kids sort of latch on to certain actresses primarily and certain celebrities and people in general. And we just, if there's a connection that you make with that person when you're a kid, when you're a little queer kid, you don't know who you are, it just lasts forever. And that is the case
with
you.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way.
I mean, I was watching some of your movies at an age when I probably shouldn't have been watching, or nor could I understand half of them when I was the age I was watching them, but yet I still had to go see them.
Well, thank you.
Yes, of course.
That's a great compliment.
Well, you're welcome, man. I was probably the only kid in there watching American Beauty being like, I don't understand this, but I like it.
You know, it's funny, that one particularly, I have a memory of being in the park with my kids and I was walking out and this kid on a bike, he like saw me, he stopped. He was probably 12.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you're in that movie. I've snuck into it 4 times.
That was
and
me.
I thought, wow, there's something about this movie that for some people, it strikes a chord.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Apples Never Fall is also in that mix of, I mean, this is a family similar to American Beauty. This is a family I don't want to have dinner with. But I'm fascinated by, no, I mean, I do if I have protection maybe or something out, you know, something, I don't know, but they're so interesting and so complex. What about this family and this story did you respond to?
Well, one thing I really like is the writing, because there's a dark humor there. There's, you know, it kind of teeters on comedy and drama all the time. And I really like that about the writing, like some of the other things you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. When writing is good, sometimes you don't know, wait, is this really funny or is this really horrible and sad? Because, of course, those things coexist all the time. So I like that about it. It's a kind of delicious, fun problem because... Yeah. You know, as you're watching it, things are, you know, you're going to get there somehow and it gets dark, but it never takes you to a dark place that many of the things that I have done have gone to.
Yeah.
And there's something sort of fun about that. You know, it does have a kind of delicious tone that I wanted to get into. I liked that about it. It's not earnest, which I love.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also this sort of like, I mean, you're right. There is this humor to it, but there's also this, like you keep wondering the motivations behind every character because every single family member seems to have something out for every other family member. And it makes you wonder what the hell happened in this family so early
on. Isn't that normal? Isn't that normal?
I mean, I don't know.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, not kidding.
Yes.
Well, certainly everybody has a secret.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
Yeah.
You know, that's, There is a gun in the drawer, as it were, and somebody shows it to you right away. And so you sort of know that there's a possibility that things could go in any direction as a viewer, I hope. I mean, at least I hope that's what people feel. Yeah. That's what I think we're going for is, you know, well, wait, well, who has the secret that's actually going to tell us what is behind what's going on and who is just being a normal person with normal, weird secrets?
Yes, yes, 1,000%. There's also this element of, too, because I mean, you know, like I said, I've been following you for years. I've watched all your stuff. And you have a way of delivering a line that is just so unique to you and so unique to sort of like how you are as an actress. And I liken it to sort of like if there was like a Oscar caliber actress like working on a soap opera, that would be you. And she's in this movie and this or this show. And it is delicious. It's one of those like, you know, something is happening behind those eyes. You know, something is going on in this woman's mind. But yet we don't know it, at least in the beginning. We don't know what's happening. And it's just such a fun ride.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad. I want that. I want the show to have that. I think right now, for sure, we all need a certain amount of just entertainment.
Yes.
We just need that. We need a good laugh. We need a good story that may, you know, a good thing that involves us and jettisons us out of our own world and our own issues. Not only that, but the issues of the world around us, which are so grave, into something that's just entertaining.
Yeah. And it also makes you want to, I mean, what I love about a show like this, which I think is also true of so much of your work, is that it makes you want to sort of call your friend or text your friend and be like, you really need to watch this. you really, it's one of those shows. And you're so right. At a time like now, where we are still sort of dealing with, I mean, we're dealing with the political realities, we're dealing with sort of, not a post-COVID, but you know what I mean, that sort of wakening up to a new reality in a new world. We need shows like this in a way. And I think Peacock is delivering in that with so many of the things they have on, but this show in particular, it's just juicy.
Yeah, it's juicy. I love that. It is good fun. And, you know, I guess maybe in some ways when, for me, if I watch something that I really enjoy, that is just good entertainment, mm-hmm. I can sort of see the world around me in a different way and I can contextualize it in a different way. Totally. So maybe that's for me personally, why I also need that kind of, whether it's reading or whether, you know, it's a certain book mm-hmm. or it's a certain show that just takes me to a place. And then when I come back to the realities of the domestic political situation yeah. in the United States, which is so serious mm-hmm. or, you know, what's going on around the world, then I can maybe see it and feel it in a better way.
Yeah. A more sober way in a way too. Cause your mind,
yes,
your mind has been exercised in a different kind of way. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I also love about your performance in this is that it harkens to so many of the other women that you've played, in that you do this thing where, like I said before, where you know there's something going on behind the eyes of this woman that we don't know yet, that she's thinking something, and your face is so expressive without doing very much to tell us something's coming. Something, some reveal or some breakdown or something is going to happen with this woman and we don't know it yet. Do you seek, and I see that a lot in sort of when you play mothers particularly, which I think is so fascinating. I'm thinking of The Kids Are All Right or even American Beauty, where there's something going on where this woman is not just a mother. And is that something you look for in these kind of roles?
I think good writing always has that. Good writing has an opportunity to maybe look into an inner life of a person. Mm. One thing that cameras can do in a way that I don't think, I mean, you can see it on the stage, but it's more rare, that you see private moments. Yeah. And we all, of course, live inside our private minds. And we also have our daily lives where we're with people, we're interacting, and then we're alone. And in the alone moments, you know, obviously there's no one there and we all live alone inside of our heads. And so I feel like movies can offer an insight into those parts of ourselves that no one sees. And that, you know, it's like when you read a book and you see something in a book and you realize, oh, I thought that I just thought that, or I thought I just felt that.
Yeah.
You're telling me a secret I didn't even know I had. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like in good writing, like American Beauty, Alan Ball, mm-hmm. he really, you know, plumbed the depths of that. And I think Leanne Moriarty is touching on these kinds of things in her writing too, mm-hmm. perhaps in a less serious way. But yet it's not less serious in a way. I mean, it is serious. And, yeah. And like any great writing, underneath it, whether it's comedy or something really serious, mm-hmm. there's something deep.
Yeah.
Even in the best comedies, there's something very deep. There's a deep dis-ease mm-hmm. inside of people mm-hmm. that we're trying to dramatize in order to like show the rest of us. So yeah, this is in you and this is in a lot of people, maybe.
Yeah. It's so interesting you bring up the sort of stage versus film acting style, because I think I've seen you here in Los Angeles at the Geffen Playhouse, Hedda Gabler. I've seen you perform on stage before, and you are a great stage actor, and you bring sort of some of the sensibilities of stage acting to many of your film works, which I find, do you see a similarity in how you approach a role both on stage and in film? Like, do you bring some of that stage work to a filmed project?
It's the same. It's not really different. What's different is the number of times you have to bring a story to life. So the inner work, I think, is very similar. It's just that, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day who had never done a play. She had done a bunch of movies and she described doing a play for the first time and how demanding and different it was. The reason being that, of course, you're living that story every day and some days twice a day. So you're going through all the story over and over. So you have to find ways of stimulating yourself into the moment that are more varied. Because obviously, if you're only doing a moment for or a scene for a day and a half, what you have to draw on to get yourself there is different than when you're doing it every day. Mm-hmm. So that is certainly different about it. And the camera, of course, versus being on the stage is so different. You know, one thing I wanted to mention when we're talking about this is when I was in acting school, we did something called a private moment where, and this was early in the training, where you're asked to, when you're at home, do something that you do when you're only alone. Like maybe somebody puts on a symphony and they're like doing the conducting of the symphony, something that you would never do if somebody was watching you because you would look foolish.
My boyfriend does that oftentimes at night when music is on, he does this. We just do this at home. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's probably the sign of a good relationship that you can do it in front of each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, you get the idea. And so they were trying to draw out of us this awareness of what we do when we're alone and how that can be useful in terms of acting. And I remember the exercise, and I remember certain people doing the exercise. And I remember one guy, they were very critical of him because he was sort of posing and he got out a book and he was sort of reading aloud. And it just, you didn't buy that it was private because actually it's very hard to do.
Yeah.
And so, the exercise was that you find 5 minutes where you're doing that at home and then you bring it into class and you show it. Mm-hmm. So, it was a very useful thing to think about. And a lot of times in film, the moments that we remember characters are in are often quiet. They're not really saying anything. Mm-hmm. It may be something they may be receiving some information from someone else, or they might just be by themselves experiencing something.
That's so interesting because that's one of the things I was thinking watching this is, you know, you've read the script, you're a producer on this project, you know how this ends. It's not like this is a shock at the end. So when you're acting in a scene, I mean, I would be the worst actor because I have so much anxiety that I'm thinking 10 steps down the line about like where I have to be and what I have to do and where I have to go. Whereas like for an actor, you really have to kind of compartmentalize your brain space in terms of where your thought process is, because for someone like you, you are so expressive, if you're thinking of where this story goes, it's going to read on your face. So how do you get to that place where you're not thinking of where this story goes? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it is sort of a central task. And of course, you have your own brain that's talking to you, because if you didn't, you would be psychotic. You know, this is a pretend. Yeah. This isn't you.
Yeah.
This moment that you're in isn't actually real. But the immersion and the level of immersion that you can find is sort of the, it's kind of the, how do I say, it's like the icing on the cake.
Mm, mm-hmm.
It's, you know, there are a few moments maybe in my entire career that I can think of where I felt completely free and immersed in a moment. I mean, really immersed without feeling insane, you know, but just feeling free, and probably more than a few. There've been a number, but that's kind of what you're going for. But most of the time, of course, you're not there. There is a brain, and there's doubt, and there's fear and insecurity, and there's the laundry list, and there's your children at home, and there's your mother, and oh, your dad passed away, and you're tired, or you're sick, or you have a headache, or all of the things that happen. And in a way, one of the things a lot of acting schools talk about, and Uta Hagen, who was one of the great acting teachers and wrote a great book about acting called Respect for Acting, she says, use it.
Yeah.
Whatever is going on in your real life that is can be used as fuel for the moment that you're in as an actor. So I like that idea, because then everything gets poured into it. But dealing with fear, insecurity, doubt, that and distractions, that's a really good one to talk about, because for me, it's just like what I try to do is just say, yeah, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm nervous right now. I'm aggravated at that other person, or I'm too exhausted to do this, or whatever that is that's going on I try to just accept, acknowledge it and say, oh yeah, that's what I'm actually feeling.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And it's so fascinating. I love that. Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you about this project is Leanne Moriarty. I mean, she's this is kind of in the canon of a lot of her other great things that have been developed into projects like Big Little Lies. Did that style and her style, and did Big Little Lies at all, I mean, the impact that that had on sort of even just limited series and how it sort of blew it up into a real, real art form, a new wave of it into an art form. Did that influence at all sort of you thinking, oh, I definitely want to do this?
Definitely, because of the quality of the acting, too. Mm-hmm. When I look at some of the performances in her writing, there is an inherent theatricality.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? I don't know. That just means that she's able to sort of...
You can see it. When you read it, you can see it.
Yeah, she puts into life like the stuff that's going on. And in the hands of good actors, that can be really fun to watch. And that can be really engrossing. Mm-hmm. So, it definitely informed that. And just talking to the showrunner, Melanie Marnich, who'd already been working on it for quite a long time. And she was just so steeped in it and also completely articulate, which kind of blew me away, that she was able to sort of describe everything and talk about what was important to her and what were the underpinnings. And she was very also responsive to creative questions like, well, what about this? And why is that? And in a good way. And when people like that, I like that. I like being challenged. Like, why is that? And why is this? And let's not just take it for granted.
Yeah.
When you start digging a bit deeper, which is what she was doing, then that's where the gold is. That's where the fun is.
Yeah, definitely. Well, she definitely found it. Well, I have to ask you, because I would be very remiss if I didn't, about NIAID right now and how exciting of a moment. When I saw that movie, I mean, you literally, it was crazy. Because like I said before, as a gay person, there we latch on to actors, and you and Jodie Foster were kind of those for me. And the fact that you both are in this movie and that you both got nominated for this movie for the Oscar is just such a thrilling, exciting moment for little kid me to see two favorites get in this moment and do this amazing movie. How does it feel to sort of be in this moment with this film?
It's really exciting. And what you just said about Jodie, the fact that Jodie and I are in this together, mm-hmm. because we didn't know each other when we started. And
that shocked me.
I was so grateful that she did the movie. The minute she signed on, I felt like, okay, now I know we have a movie, because she has such gravitas and she's so smart and she just had so many good ideas, and we just got on very, very well. And we've become friends. So that is a thrill. And also Diana and Bonnie mm-hmm. are such characters. They're such wonderful women. Like, for instance, yesterday, Diana sent me a picture of the two of them. They play tennis now obsessively. Like, they play every day and they compete, of course.
Of course.
And they like won the trophy for their age group, I think it was.
Okay.
And they showed me this one, and they sent it to our group chat. And, you know, these queer women, they're now in their 70s.
Yeah.
And there's something really important about that for me.
Yeah.
Just acknowledging and seeing also that we see these women doing things that we don't imagine mm-hmm. women of that age doing.
Yeah.
And we certainly, and maybe even more queer women of that age doing.
Yeah.
So it's like it expands our brains. Like, we have these certain unconscious assumptions about people mm-hmm. that we all do it.
Yep.
You know, it's just human. Mm-hmm. And then when something happens, it's like, oh, we're seeing people in a different way.
Yeah.
Like, I was listening to Tracy Ellis Ross talk about her movie this year, American Fiction.
Great film.
And she was talking about, you know, how we don't normally see people of color sitting and having the situations that they're having in that movie.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's so true. That's so smart. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I think NIAID has a certain amount of that too. A little girl wrote me a note. She went to a screening the other night and she just wrote me this note about, I really like the movie and I like how hard you worked. And I just thought, oh, that's so cool. This little girl
yeah.
gets gets to look up at these women, mm-hmm. queer women, and say, oh, that's what it's like.
Yeah.
To be 60 something and to want something really badly and to try really hard and to have a really good friend.
Yeah.
Who helps you.
That part of it, redefining, I mean, as a queer person, this is what I left the film and what so many of my friends, that my friend group we've been talking about, is this idea of sort of, you know, love is not the be all end all. And oftentimes with relationships, we don't know where we're going to be in the 60s and 70s. And the fact that they were a family and that there wasn't love, romance was not a part of it. It was just, because family comes in lots of different ways and shapes, and relationships come in lots of different forms. And it really, it's something that we don't see a lot with queer stories or stories in general. And the fact that it's out there, I think, is just so important.
Yeah. And I think from my direct experience with my friends, my kid, yeah. from friends of mine, a lot of, not all, but obviously many queer people are estranged from their families because yeah. their families don't accept them, right? Mm-hmm. So this idea of chosen family is very familiar mm-hmm. to people in that world.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just important that people see that. And the fact that they once did date,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah.
And that's also really, really common.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I like that we're showing that without having to talk about it too much. It's just like inherent in the story.
Yeah, no, so true. Well, I only have two more questions for you. This one is probably one of my most important questions. You are in a very small club of people on the internet. Well, I'm leading this charge of people who are very angry that you and Glenn Close don't have Oscars. And it, for years, this has bothered me. And I know it probably doesn't bother you as much as it bothers me, but there's a whole crew of primarily gay men out there who are just vehement that you deserve an Oscar at some point in your career. Are you aware of how angry we are that you don't have an Oscar? That's what I want to know.
No, I didn't know you were angry. Oh,
furious.
My God, I'm pleased.
Furious.
So pleased you're furious. Thank God. I want you to just stay mad.
We will. We're just so furious. I mean, there are so many moments. I mean, we love Hilary Swank, but there's an anger at her too. There's an anger at her too for taking your Oscar. It's just, there are so many moments of like, we want you to have an Oscar so badly, which just shows the impact that you've had in your film career, but it's out there and it's a very loud chorus. Just so you know, Ms. Bidding, just so you know. Well, my final question for you is, one of the things that I, as a fan of Hollywood and film and acting and just in general, I love the work you're doing with the Actors Fund, because for people like me who is, I call myself a professional fan, and I just love everything Hollywood and everything film, to support the people that we watch, even the people who maybe aren't the famous ones out there doing and surviving, and when they're in trouble and they need help or whatever the case may be, the Actors Fund is just such a vital place. And I have so many friends who have relied on it. And I think the work you're doing for it is so amazing. So I wanted to ask you, what are you doing for it right now? And how can people become more involved in the Actors Fund?
Thank you. I really appreciate that. So the Actors Fund, first of all, let me just say, we recently changed our name. And the reason that we did that was because we have been known as the Actors Fund for 140 years. And we have a great, you know, in that world, a lot of people know us by that name. And we really had to think about it carefully because we love that name.
Yeah.
The problem was, as our mandate sort of expanded, people thought we were just for actors. And so we constantly had to remind people, no, we're not just for actors. We're for everybody in show business. So we ended up actually changing our name to the Entertainment Community Fund recently. And what we do is, we're a social services organization for everybody in show business. That's everybody. You can be an usher in a theater. You can be the guy that runs the spotlight. You can be a costumer. You can be an actor. You can be a dancer, choreographer, producer, director, grip. So everybody in front of or behind the camera and the curtain. We do as much housing as we can. We just built a new apartment building in the middle of Hollywood that is dedicated to artists, and it's low-income housing. We do healthcare, and we do health insurance counseling to help people get and maintain health insurance. One of the big things that happened during the pandemic was that everybody was out of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we started a work stoppage fund. It's an emergency assistance fund that we've always had, but we raised a tremendous amount of money. I think we ended up giving out like $20 million that other people, we became a kind of hub because it was an easy place to go and apply for money, our website. So a lot of people gave us money, including the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and the showrunners and the stage hands union. All of us kind of got together and pooled the money and gave it out. The same thing happened during the strike. We had a work stoppage fund because, as I'm sure you know very well, during the strike, it was a necessary strike and it was devastating economically to a lot of people. Not only the people on strike, the writers and the actors, but all the ancillary people that work with us. So we tried to raise as much money as we could to help people. It's not everything, but it's something. It was enough money for some people to just pay their rent for 1 month or get their medical bills paid or get their lighting, you know, bill, their electricity bill paid. Mm-hmm. So I love them because they are, we are, have integrity. Like there's, you know, there's a charity rating system. There's a charity navigator. And when you give money to a place, you want to know that it's going to go somewhere real.
Yeah.
So we have a very good reputation in that way. And that's why I work with the, used to be the Actors Fund, now the Entertainment Community Fund. Yeah. I love the people and I love the work that we're trying to do together. And it's a big team effort. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, what's more fun than that, being amongst a group of people that you love and admire and, you know, you have a common purpose.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Annette, this has been such an honor, such a real treat. I'm going to stay furious until that day comes. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to chat with me. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, H. Allen. It was really fun. And maybe our paths will cross again. I appreciate your enthusiasm. And, you know, don't stay mad for too long. Maybe five more minutes and then you get to be happy again.
Well, I mean, it's all from love. It's all from love.
Thank you.
I can still hear Annette Bening telling me, stay mad. It needs to be my new ringtone. Honestly, it does. I mean, I'm obsessed with it. Let me know what you thought of today's episode. I'm H. Allen Scott on everything and leave a little rating and review wherever you're listening to this podcast. And you know what to do. Go to newsweek.com and follow us on all the social platforms and subscribe to my newsletter for the culture. Until then, watch a bunch of Annette Bening films and have a great day.